Blog Talk Radio.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
Welcome to BYO Brilliance. This is a special show for me. It's actually one day after my mom turned 84 years young. And she's quite an amazing woman. I think I tell her that enough, so she probably already knows that. Her name is Donnie, D-O-N-N-I-E. And she was born in Shreveport, Louisiana, and transported to the North about the time she graduated when she was 16. She graduated early. And so I thought it would be really a treat to listen to somebody who had sort of two perspectives of what was going on in the United States. Oh, man, let's see. Way back in 1946, 47, 48, in those time frames. And because there were a lot of things going on, it was just a little bit before the big civil rights era push. But the difference that she may have experienced in how people treat you when you're in schools or college or just on the streets, however, because Washington State is quite a bit different than Shreveport. So, welcome, Mom, to the show.
Okay.
I do have some questions for my mom, but really, you're welcome to call in if you have any questions to ask my mom, and if she can answer them or she's willing to answer them, then I'll leave it in her hands if she's going to answer it or not. She doesn't feel it's appropriate or it's something that she wants to answer or could answer, then she'll let you know because I can't speak for her. But I've known this woman all my life. I'm the youngest child of hers and my dad, Ivan, and or Isaac. And I think that they were unique parents. This is my little introduction for my mom. I think that they were unique parents in that they really fostered intellect, I guess, or knowledge and education. That was something that was very big in our household. There was always books everywhere. One of the things that I said about the preview to this is my mom would, if you asked questions like, Anywhere in the house. It's like, how do you spell touches? How do you spell this? I have four older brothers and sisters. My mom would still say, look it up, because it was just important for you to go find that knowledge yourself. And one of my favorite wisdoms that she gave us was, don't be in the wrong place at the right time. And I used to think that was the silliest phrase until I was 21 and I was with a bunch of young kids that were under 21 and we were all supposed to go on a little trip and they had me pull the car over and they were trying to load some alcohol in the car. And all I thought was my mom literally ran through my head, don't be in the wrong place at the right time. I was the only one that was 21. I would have been the one that went to jail. The alcohol did not come into the car. They had to stash it back in the woods where they stashed it. And pretty much that evening went bust, but I didn't go to jail, thanks to my mom. You just never know when that stuff will come back to either haunt you or remind you that you have better things to do in life than to play with some noggin heads. So I thank you for that, Mom. I have four siblings. I'm the youngest. My oldest brother, Carl, he's passed on, but he was almost like a dad, too, because he was 14 years older than me, and he had that much authority over my life. And some of you have already heard my brothers, Mark and David. They were on another show a couple of weeks ago, very handsome and very intelligent men. My sister hasn't been on the show, but she's quite intelligent as well and really enjoyable to talk to sometimes, you know, just like anybody else. So with that, is there something that you would like to say, Mom, just to start out? I mean, now that you're 84 years young.
No, you're doing good right now.
Okay.
I'm looking at questions.
Yeah, I have some questions for my mom, so let's just go ahead and I'll pop some things in here and there. I'll try to check the chat room in case somebody has any questions and if something to say. It looks like my friend Melody in Texas, she said happy birthday to Canada. Okay, never mind. But I know she said happy birthday to you yesterday, Mom, so
yes.
I probably forgot to tell you that. But anyway, so here we go. Now, I did want to ask about your name. Your name, Donnie, D-O-N-N-I-E, it's a little bit different. It's not Donna. It's Donnie. Can you tell us something about your name?
The recording in Shreveport, Louisiana, spelled it D-A-N-N-I-E. And they did not correct it until later. My grandmother, my father's mother, was named D-O-N-N-A. And they were naming me after her, with Elizabeth being my middle name.
Oh.
And so it came out Danny, but then when we checked with the records and tried to correct it, they just changed the A to O. So I'm Donnie Elizabeth Berry. Well, now I am. That's it.
Oh. In those you're named after your great grandmother? Or your grandmother?
After my grandmother.
There
in the
go.
South, you were named after family members. And this is why they named me.
Oh, okay. I remember that you had a friend that kept wanting to call you Donna, and I just think that he had a trouble with just that concept of Donnie. I think he thought it should have been a guy's name or something, but I remember when he tried to call you Donna, and I remember thinking, that's not right. Something's wrong with the way he keeps Donna. I never really equated it with anything, but I do remember, I believe it was Mama Lenny, my great-grandmother, and your grandmother on your mom's side. I remember her talking about your grandmother, what kind of lady she was like. Do you remember anything about her?
No, I don't remember.
She's rather elegant.
Not my father's mom. I don't remember because I was small. Evidently, she passed when I was quite a small child. So I have no recollection of her. Of my dad's father, I do, but not of my dad's mom.
Now, don't you have a portrait of her, though? at the house?
I have a portrait of my dad and my grandmother, yes.
Yeah. She's very elegant. Very elegant lady.
Yes. They said that she was very elegant. She was beautiful, and she was very educational, intellectual.
Wow. Just keep on rolling that legacy down. I like it. Okay. Now, you all came to the North. As a matter of fact, I've spoken to my mom's best friend. She's had her best friend. When did you meet Dorothy?
In the third grade.
In the third grade. She's still
best
friends with her friend from the third grade. She's sort of like my auntie. So I call her and talk to her, and sometimes I can get some little bits of information about my mom from when she was a kid. Because mom doesn't really talk about stuff like that just to talk about it. And sometimes I bug her with questions, and she'll say, "Brenda, I don't remember this, such a long time ago." But then if I get some little bit of information from her best friend, Dorothy, then I talk to my mom. Then my mom will illuminate it a little bit. But and that's how I found out my mom graduated when she was 16 years old, as did Dorothy. So you guys are a couple of sharpshooters there. You guys are pretty smart.
Well, Dorothy graduated at 15. She's a year behind me.
Oh, okay, 1 year. Wow, that's amazing. That's not that common. Anyways, but she also said that the family was already moving to the North before you graduated. So, but she said that on graduation day or the very next day that my grandmother, Mom Marina, that she actually came and brought you and took you north.
My dad was in the Coast Guard, and he was on the USS Augusta, and they had came to Bremerton to get repairs, and he fell in love with the Evergreen State. And so he said, "We're going to move out here." And
yay!
My mother wanted me to continue education and to go to college, so she came out a year before and established residency so that I could be a student at the UW.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's why we moved to Seattle, which I hated at the time.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, you know, what was it like when you found out you had to move? That's probably most young people who have been around their teenage pals get a little bothered about not being able to see them again. But you guys had a pretty close class, didn't you, your high school class?
Yes, there were 300 of us that graduated from an all-black high school.
Wow.
But we graduated on the 30th, and on the 1st of June, I was on my way to Seattle, and I cried for weeks and weeks and weeks because I didn't want to leave my friends.
Well, you now, just a little side note, I didn't put this in here. You went to one of the reunions, I remember it was probably about 10 years ago, was it?
Went to most of the reunions, and then I had the class up here in 95.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, and you all still stay in touch.
Yes, we do.
Now, that's a close high school class. I don't even remember the people from my high school. Sorry, folks. I remember a couple of them, and most of them remember me more than I remember them. And every once in a while I would see somebody and they'd go, Brenda? But I definitely not that close. So, but and I think in my class, my graduating class was about 500. Your whole school was 300, is that correct?
Yes. No, the graduating class was 300.
Oh, your graduating class. That's it. Wow, that was a big class back then, wasn't it? Mom, was that
well,
like?
Well, at that time, you only had the one high school where the Afro-Americans, as we are now called, could go to high school and graduate. So you had children from all around the surrounding communities come in to Central. At that time, it was called Central Colored High School. And that's where everybody graduated from high school.
Wow. That's way different than what I went to school with. It all kinds of colors. Until I got to high school, yeah. Okay. So then did any of your classmates move up north to the Seattle area that you know of? Or did everybody that you went to high school with sort of stay back in the Louisiana area?
There were some people moved here. They came out to work for Boeing or the Bethlehem Steel or the Bremerton Naval Shipyard.
Wow. So tell us about, if you can, tell us about the trip up to Seattle. How did you come up to Seattle? Was it a plane or
train.
Train, or how did that go?
A train, 5 days. And it came, and I came to this smoky, dirty town because they burned coal. And I was used to gas and electric back in the South, in Shreveport.
Wow. That's what they used for
in 47,
heating in the home?
Coal. What? Yes, you had to make sure you had your name registered with the coal people deliverer so that you got your coal on time. Otherwise, they came in your area at certain days, on certain days, at certain time, and you had to be on their list so they would deliver you coal. Otherwise, you were without heat. Your coal was used to cook. The coal was used to heat water. And that was it. Few privileged people had gas.
I actually remember the hot stoves and the food cooked on the hot stoves at my great-grandmother's house. Not my great-grandmother's house. Well, actually, it was my great-uncle's house. Uncle Buddy and Aunt Johnny, I believe, still were using the hot stove in one of the rooms. It seemed like I remember somebody else had one, but maybe it was Aunt Johnny. And I remember the little handles that she had to use to catch hold of the little plates to open and maybe throw some wood down into the stove if you're going to cook on top of it. Did you have a hot... So you didn't even have that kind of stove when you were back in Louisiana? You had just an electric stove?
We had gas.
Or did you have a hot stove?
My grandparents, Mama Lenny, out on the farm, they used wood.
Huh. That's so
different.
We lived
in the city.
Yeah.
So the city had electric.
Uh-huh. That was quite modern. Quite modern. Okay.
Yep.
So let's see. What were some of the immediate differences that you encountered after moving to the north? Besides
well, in
the
south, you had signs that said colored and white. And in the north, they didn't have signs, but they ignored you. So they were still prejudiced here in Seattle and in Tacoma and in Portland, Oregon, and at Fort Lewis, the Army base. And then they had a big riot at Fort Lewis. And also
what
one
was
out
the
at
riot?
Fort Lawton.
What happened? In Fort Lawton?
Well, the soldiers decided that if they could go and fight, why couldn't they have equal whatever that was here? And they rebelled, and it caused a riot. And the outcome of that is that the commanding officer said that would no longer be segregation among the men at Fort Lewis and Fort Lawton.
Wow. Well, about what time frame was that, Mom?
Oh, I don't know. It was in the late 40s or the early 50s.
Early 50s. Wow. I don't even know if Cheryl knew about that. She's never really talked about that. Carl, well, I imagine, I don't know, I never really talked to Carl about the bases. My oldest brother was in the Army, so we had a lot of military people in our family, all the way down to Cheryl, so, who's still in the Army, retired from the Army, I guess, or something. So, yeah, I just can't imagine. Now, no, real quickly, were riots kind of a thing that would happen around the Seattle area over race issues on a regular basis or just for big issues like that?
I don't know about it. I don't remember any rioting in Seattle. These were at the Army bases.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall rioting in Seattle.
Okay, so now the people would ignore you. Were all white people that way, or did you find that they were... let me say what I would say is, did you feel sort of more fearful of how white people were going to treat you, or were you just expecting them to treat you the same as they did in Louisiana, or were you surprised if they did treat you nicer or not as nice, just in different areas that you went,
it
like if you
so
worked or when you're in college?
It wasn't so much as that the people would treat you there. It was the establishments. If you went in to get a meal, they would wait on everybody else, and they would wait on you less. So that was the type of thing that you had.
I know that I always heard even Carl, my oldest brother, used to talk about there were certain, and Dad used to talk about there were certain places in the Seattle area that black people weren't allowed to really be. Like you were, like there were certain areas that were neighborhoods that you just don't be caught
that
there.
Was in Ballard, out in Ballard, which was mostly, they were people from over Swedish people at that time. It could have been other people, but you were not allowed to be caught in Ballard after curfew, which was 10 o'clock. You could be arrested, even though you might have had a legitimate reason for being out there.
Like if you had worked at somebody's house?
Possibly. I don't know what the legitimate reasons were, but we were... people were warned that you didn't go to Ballard, be caught out there after hours. That was the only one that really stood out in my mind and that we were aware of.
I think Carl talked about a place called Broadmoor.
Well, Broadmoor is a private place, and neither blacks or Japanese was allowed out in Broadmoor. The average Japanese could have bought and sold the average person in Broadmoor. They had the money to do it, but they would not allow them to buy on the property out there. We could work out there.
I,
but we could not buy property out there.
Oh,
that was
wow.
That was changed in the late 50s because Broadmoor went broke, so they had to get money whichever way they could. So they opened up to let people live out there, purchase property out there.
Yeah, one of my exes, he's Japanese American, and he actually was one of the ones that had been sent to the internment camps from the World War II, but he was actually working with the community because they were still finding here in the late 1980s, 1990s, they were still finding these weird covenants in some neighborhoods in Seattle where they were not, it was actually written into the deed, you weren't allowed to sell that property to a black person or a Japanese person.
Yeah, I
in the 1990s.
With...
Huh?
Yes. Some of my dear friends are Japanese, and we used to talk about how things had changed in the later years than
yeah.
when the Japanese could not. Someone, if they wanted property, someone, a Caucasian had to buy the property, and then they could sell it later to the Japanese, but they couldn't, Japanese couldn't buy it. So quite different now.
Yeah. Thank goodness. I can't remember the name of you and Dad had some friends that lived in the apartment, really posh apartment complex over in Columbia City by the mailboxes over there in the big ball field. And I remember that we all had went to the their house for dinner when we were Cheryl and Mark and I were around 7, 8, 9, or 8, 9, 10. And yeah, they're just the sweetest people. I'm not sure where you met them. Was it George? Somebody named George or something? Do you remember them, Mom?
At Seattle University.
Oh! College. Yeah. They were so sweet. And that used to be a really, that was a really posh apartment complex, but now that area is not quite the same anymore.
They have a lot of student and killing over there now.
Yeah.
Different.
There are, now that's another thing, Mom. There's a lot of changes in Seattle from way back when you first came.
Yes.
Well, the World's Fair came to Seattle, actually, the year Cheryl was born. So, did you want to talk about that? I mean, I don't know if you were a fan of Elvis, but I remember that was a big thing about Elvis coming to the World's Fair at Seattle Center. Did you go to the fair then, or were you just too sick with the pregnancy or anything like that?
No, I went to the fair. There were people came up from California, friends of ours. We took them out to the fair. And you got to read, went in. And also you kids, little ones, got to go in the fair to do the bubble before the bubble was taken out.
Well, there was the bubble later. Is it, just to describe to the listeners, the bubble later was, they had the in the Seattle Center, there's what they called the International Food House or International House of, I don't know what the main name is right now, but they had international foods all around in this circular sort of complex. And then there was this big bubble in the center that went from the bottom up three floors. And I don't know, it could probably fit in there about 20, maybe 30 people. And it was all acrylic, I believe, sort of acrylic glass bubble elevator, and they called it the Bubbleator. And it was really, really slow, but it was really space age back in the 1960s, early 1960s. And it was really sad. It was really sad when they finally closed it off because it became, I think, a little too costly to keep maintaining it. And most people could hike it up the stairs in less than a minute, so it was easier to just take the stairs or the elevators, I think. But now, from my understanding back then, that a private investor actually has the Bubbleator. I can't remember whose house has it, but yeah. I wasn't even born yet during the World's Fair, so I didn't get to go. But the Seattle Center still stood, all this space age stuff, and had many a good times as a kid over there. Yeah. So. Let's see. Here's some other things. Oh, that's another thing I wanted to ask you. What were some things that you wish that you had from the South after you got here? Any kind of foods or things like that that you weren't able to get? Maybe any kind of types of candies or is there anything like that you missed when you came to the North?
There were a lot of things because they didn't know about okra at the farmer's market. They didn't know about the collard greens and different types of greens, mustard greens. They didn't know about what we call black-eyed peas. That's the little pea with the black circumference in it. And they didn't know about butter beans. So most of the southern dishes, food, they didn't know about it in the 40s, 46, 40, till about 50. Then all of a sudden you saw these signs that said collard greens and black-eyed peas and butter beans and okra. You know, you'd go to the market and they says, we got okra, we got okra. You know, and they expected you, if you were Afro-American, black, you know, they definitely wanted to sell you okra. You needed it. So that was the kind of food. Now you can go in. One other thing I have to bring up is that the packing house, the meat factories, would give the bones and the innards and stuff to people with farms so they could give to the hogs. Then they found out that they could make money, so they started charging for pig feet and pig ears and the heart of the cow or the hog. And so, you know, and now you go into markets and you've got these huge prices of, like, neck bones and liver and so forth, you know. That used to be thrown away, given to farmers so they could feed that. Then they decided they could make money off it. No, they do.
That is hilarious. I would never have even considered that if you hadn't have said that, Mom. Because I remember, Mom, I'm not really sure where Mom Lenny used to get the hog head when she would make hog head cheese, but did she get it at the grocery store?
No, you had to go to the...
Or did she just have to go to a farm to get it?
The
huh?
meat factory.
Meat factory, okay. That's so funny. Okay. Okay, so what else did we have? Let's see. Can you tell us about some of the milestones in your life, either personally or historically in America or the world, that you feel affected you strongly are possibly some of your beliefs? For instance, I remember you and Dad getting a telescope and watching the moon to see if we could see the men up there, even though our telescope wasn't that powerful. Some of the milestones, you know, through life for 80 years or, well, however many years at a certain level, 70, 60 years, are some of those milestones that you just remember and were really big in your life or affected you big?
Well, in school, we were taught get an education and prepare for the opportunity because it only knocks once. And be, when you prepare yourself, who knows when the door is going to open and you are not ready. So our teachers taught us, school in the South was, you learned. It wasn't a plaything. It wasn't something that you goof off at. You learned. They made sure that you had an education and that you were prepared so that when the time came, you were ready. So when I came here and I went out to the UW, at that time, there was about 3,000 international students mixed and what have you. We were all, as I'd say, coming from a school of where there was about 600 students all total to the UW, University of Washington, where you had about 3,000, and now you have millions of kids out there. And that you learn. I took German, and I used to read Aesop fables to Carl, my oldest, your brother, and he learned. He loved German so well, and he learned it. And they would send him in service. The army would send him to Germany quite often because here was this black person that could speak fluent German. And they used it, took advantage of it, which gave him an advantage to travel. And also when he married, he took his family over there so that they got to enjoy it.
You did really well with the German. Pardon? I said you did really well with the German. I mean, you still retained it. I know when I was in high school.
Well, you learned some, and we used to, but I don't anymore. If you don't use it, you lose it.
Well, I went to a foreign language camp. I was studying German from junior high, and so I had studied it about 4 years. But I went to a foreign language camp, and it was a really good one. I was there for a week. You weren't allowed to speak or eat or do anything in English, so it was like an extreme immersion in the language. And I was no longer thinking in English a week later. All I'd heard and all I did was all German, and most of us were pretty, I mean, it was hard in the beginning, but by the end of the week, we were pretty fluent. I was taught to think only in German. So when I came home, Mom and I were going to go to a college fair, and I found it really difficult to think in English. So every time someone would ask me a question, I was trying to grasp the words again in English, and I would talk to my mom in German, and then Mom would translate. I know it sounds really strange, but the way that my instructors explained to me, some people have an ear, which I apparently have, so it's real easy for me to switch languages and pick up different diphthongs and all those different kinds of things, and that's why it was harder for me to switch back. But, yeah, you understood everything really well. I was kind of shocked. I didn't realize how well my mom knew German until then. So I think that's excellent that you would read Aesop fables. You didn't read them to me, though. Carl got everything.
Well, he was the first.
Okay. Yeah.
The rest of you didn't come along until later in life.
Yeah.
Okay,
I guess you're pretty busy by then. Okay, folks, I'm going to go ahead and give the number real quickly if you'd like to ask some questions of this historically brilliant person who happens to be my mommy. The number is 646-727-2914. We've been talking about a lot of the different racial differences, civil rights type events that took place between here and there, you know, some of the things that mom remembered, and some of the history of Seattle. So, yeah, call in if you have some questions for her about, well, I guess you could ask her some questions about me, but I will probably limit any, you know, negative responses because I'm her favorite child. We just don't tell the other kids. Right, Mom?
No comment.
Yeah, thanks
you're
for
the
silence,
baby.
Mom. I really appreciate that. Okay.
You're the baby.
So.
You're the baby. You're my baby.
Kind of likes to say that to me, huh? What was that, Mom?
You are my baby.
And then it's time to move on. I hate being called the baby. Okay, so let's move on just a little bit. We talked about what she missed in the South, and here's a good one. Do you feel better about raising your children in the North, or would you rather that they were born in the South, and why?
Yes, because the South was stronger. The North was sleepy.
Yes, you would rather we were born in the South?
Yes, because you got to know the exact things about life. My oldest son, Carl, was so enamored with the South that he went South to pick up his wife. When he had training down there, he thought it was just really super. People was really real. He also was in part of the civil rights movement in Wisconsin. When he was a teenager, he went to visit his dad's people there, and he got involved with some of the things there. Also, my oldest daughter, Cheryl, she took her training in Fort Sam down in Georgia, Carolina, Fort Jackson in Carolina. And she lives there because she fell in love with the South. That she felt that people were honest. They didn't pretend one thing and do another. And that is the thing that I had when we moved here. You know, people could die, and you never knew it. Unless you saw a body coming out of the house being taken away by the med. So we grew up being neighborly, and that was not here in Seattle. Everybody went their own way, period. And I do mean a big period.
Hmm. Wow. See, when I think about the neighborhood we grew up in on 2531 31st and Lander in Seattle, it was just up the hill from the old Sick Stadium, which I still am bothered that I never got to see a baseball game at. And it's in the Mount Baker neighborhood, if anybody knows Seattle, near Lake Washington. But what I thought when I was growing up is that was a really old-time neighborhood. Everybody knew you by your last name. The Burstons, they were Russian Jews across the street. The Becks, the big, giant Catholic family across the street. Then, I can't remember, I think they were McGuire's or something. Mark and his family right behind us that had the wrought iron fence. You know the house that was right behind us, Mom? They were
yes.
Atheists. and I can't remember their last name, the Wayne Woods down the street, one block, and everybody called you by your last name. Everybody knew
who you
were in that
you
neighborhood.
Were considered
and
a
it
person.
Was, huh?
It didn't matter what color or what ethnic background you had. You were a person. They liked you for being you. If they disliked you, it was a character that you had that they disliked. It wasn't the person.
Right. And if somebody came home and they had groceries, like Mrs. Beck, if we were playing in the street or across the street, she'd yell over, "Barry, Waynewood, get over here and help me with these groceries." And we had to go. We had to go help her move groceries in, even though she had 10 kids. And no, there was no, everyone expected you to do that. If you didn't behave, then, and I don't know how everyone knew everyone's number, somebody was going to call your parents. And they were just immediately, if you were doing something wrong, like taking a stick and hitting at somebody's window or something, they'd yell out, "Barry, you get away with it. You put that stick down and get out of there before I call your mother." It was almost like you had a whole neighborhood full of parents. So it was really different, and people did care if there was trouble, someone was sick. Now, that was in the north where I grew up, but once we left there, every neighborhood past that, they were all really cold, and they didn't seem very caring, except when we lived on Jackson and the Rogers across the street. Aunt Lynn's good friend Feathers, her parents, that lived across the street. Now, they always treated us like old-time neighbors, but the rest of the neighbors, they really didn't really interact with us all that well. It was really different. And if you're saying that back south, it was even closer, that would have been really awesome.
It was.
I guess that's how well, because didn't Dorothy live across the street from you all?
Yes, later.
Yeah.
When we were in high school.
Okay.
My parents moved down. Dorothy and him was already there, but my parents moved down to a house across
the street.
Yes,
I remember Feathers, and I remember her daughter, too, Aunt Lynn. Aunt Lynn's in the chat room.
Yeah, okay.
Your sister's not on the phone. She's not popping on the radio, I guess, to talk to you. Okay. So, let's see. So you think it would be great. I know I will say this about my mom. When I was approaching the end of high school, and I think I told Mel about this because Melody lives in Texas. My brother had called at one point, and a couple of blocks over from where they were living, they were living in Killeen, Texas. The Ku Klux Klan had marched through the street, and they had put a cross and burned a cross in someone's yard. And that was towards the end of my high school years. And my mom was talking about that to someone. I don't remember who you were talking to, probably Mrs. Hill. And she was talking about, yeah, I really want Brenda to go to college in the South so she could understand what it's really like, you know, how people really are. And I was terrified because all of my experience about Southern racism and all that were history films, and they were portraying all this stuff about the lynchings and the beatings and the horrific things from the civil rights era. I thought that I wouldn't probably survive, but yeah. Lynn wants to know if you could speak about politics and how they've changed since you were of the
politics,
age to vote.
I was I was quite active. I've been active in all my life, and so when Rosalini was running for governor, I worked on his campaign. When I was at Seattle University, they used me as a speaker because they felt that I had the stamina to be controlled and face of adversity. And I learned to speak, which was good, and it was training.
Mm-hmm.
I have worked in politics, and it depends on where you are and what the time frame is. Politics always change. In the South, the politics were quite different from what they were in the North. We had Huey P. Long, who had been governor for years and years and years. And then we came up here. I was on the Democratic committee. I worked with different phases of politics, and it's just too long to go into. To sum it up, is that this is my own independent thought and feeling. I guess I'm not what you call a true Democrat, because if a Republican or some other person has the qualities that appears to be genuine, then I am going to vote for that person. Now, if they change their mind once they get in the office, I will make sure that I vote them out the next time. And this is what we learned in the South, that you look at the character of the person and what that person stood for and what that person believed that he and at that time or she could do. So that's it on my theory on politics. And when I work in politics, I let them know I am for the best qualified that I seem to feel that can get the job done.
That's what I think. I totally agree with that.
And I remember
having a conversation.
And Joe Fain, who's a politician, and he is for the people, the little person, the middle person, not the person that's going to put the most money in his political career, but somebody that needs. And that's what, if we would get that type of thing into politics, we wouldn't have all the problems we're having in political situation now. End of sermon.
Lennis asks, what do you feel about Hillary? It's up to you if you want to answer, Ma. I know that this political stuff, you don't want to answer it? Okay. Or you're saying, no, you don't. Do you not want to answer it?
I am not going to get into future politics.
Okay.
I'm speaking of past politics.
Right. Okay. Okay. So, let's see. You've always been engaged with volunteer work for as long as I can remember. And all of your children have done some kind of volunteer work and everything. Can you speak to that? Because you're a big volunteer advocate. You do a lot of volunteer work.
If you want it done, do it. Don't depend on somebody else to do what you see need to be done. And that's how I became involved in politics, starting with the NAACP, because of youngsters that needed to know working with Rotary for with homeless kids. Working with any organization that stands to better the lives of humans, not for show, but for the benefit of helping a human learn to better themselves. And I am a firm believer that things can always be better. But you don't sit there and say, I don't like the way this is being done. You get in there and you do it. You are the change. And only you can make or bring about the change. Because if you wait for somebody else to do it, that's a no-no. That person is going to do it their way. Who knows which is the better way? Not until it has actually happened. My grandfather used to use a happenstance, and I never understood what happenstance was till it finally comes. When you're doing volunteer work, are you doing it for show? Are you doing it because you want to bring about the change that will better human conditions, human lives, human whatever? And I work with the homeless youth, and the goal of that was out at Sandpoint when they closed the Naval Air Station. We were instrumental in getting housing for homeless, pregnant women, homeless men, women. And from that, I have seen young people come out of the gutter, so to speak, and become paying citizens, contributing citizens to the world around them. And even though I like this saying from the doctor who is a favorite of mine, anything is a cinch, inch by inch. I'm not quoting him exactly, but you know who I'm talking about. I can't...
Dr. Oz?
No.
This
was
a
minister that has the world glass church in California.
Oh, are you talking about Dr. Osteen? No, he's over in Texas. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But it's still, it's a good phrase. It's like baby steps, you know. It's a cinch, inch by inch.
It is.
Take small bites. You can probably get through anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so
excellent.
From that, I'm sorry.
What?
From all of my volunteer organizations, I was nominated for the Auburn Pioneer Queen of Auburn, Washington. And it was a very interesting year. However, I learned that you're not your queen forever, because I'm in the queen's court every year until I die. So each year we continue to look for someone else to fill that shoe or to be coronated. And then I didn't realize at the time that I accepted the nomination that it was going to be every year.
The parades
and
everything.
And at that time, you had to be 80 years old in order to be a nominee. So on my 80th birthday, they came into the Rotary facility where we were meeting with a cake and these three other queens and with the crown for me. And I was crowned on June 30th, 2010. As Auburn Pioneer Queen.
First African-American Pioneer Queen.
Yes, I was the first Afro-American Pioneer Queen. They had had Japanese before me and Caucasians, but I was the first Afro-American. I didn't
well, Auburn's not really...
so much.
It wasn't the most diverse town at the time. I mean, when we first moved there anyway, right?
No, when we first moved out to Auburn, there was one black family. One. And now there are many.
Yeah. I remember when we would drive home after the weekend coming back from Seattle. There was one time we saw a black person walking on the street, and we were all pressed up against the windows like, oh, there's a black person out here. Wonder who they are. I mean, it was like we were, I know it sounds derogatory, but when you're in a town where the only black people you see are yourself in the mirror or your mother or your siblings, and you never saw anyone black ever, especially after living in Seattle, which was much more diverse, it was shocking. It's strange. And that's just a little weird little suburban pocket of a rather large metropolitan area, Seattle and Tacoma, actually. Little Seattle much more, but...
And I
so
have
you
to bring this...
Huh?
Bring this in. I don't think there was the one black family here meant that Auburn was segregated. It just meant that it was so far out, they either went to Kent and stopped and lived there, or they went to Tacoma and lived there because they were near the military base in Tacoma. And I have worked with different groups here in Auburn, and I have yet to find that there has been any animosity against any other ethnic person. I know that we are now having a diverse group of the Hispanics, and that they people are saying things against them, but I find that Auburn welcomed me when I moved out here. And I have not yet felt any bias. Now, there could be. I personally have not felt any. And I am welcome wherever I go.
Well, maybe it's because you're an adult. As a high schooler and, you know, junior high, yeah. And, it is a little bit different. And I don't know, you remember when you worked for the Muckleshoot Indian Tribe? I remember when the chief and you and I, we saw the chief in a grocery store, I think, the grocery store that was next to Peckinpah's, I think it was. We were standing in the grocery store, and the chief was there because my mom worked for the Muckleshoot Indian Tribe, and he now the chief. It's not like he's dressed in a headdress or anything. He was, you know, dressed pretty regular. Maybe he had a little more Western sort of looking gear. It wasn't really that. Like maybe he had a Laredo kind of collar or something, but. We stopped and we were talking, and so here's this Native American and these two black women, or I was a kid, you know, I was junior high or something, high school, I was in high school, and everybody was just, you guys were engrossed in talking, everyone was walking like a big wide berth around us, like almost like they had to go way out of their way to get away from walking too close to us. And I remember thinking it was disgusting. And then a lot of the Muckleshoot, well, not a lot. There was a few students that came from the tribe down to Auburn Senior High when I was attending, and I knew them from going up to the reservation with you for work or something. And so we would talk in school, and it was almost like I was a pariah when I was talking to them. I think there was some animosity going on, and one of the school administrators explained that to me. She said that there were some really foolish old people in Auburn, and the kids that I knew from the tribe basically told me that the way they're treated, they just, you know, were finding it hard to even continue in school, and they did eventually drop out. So I suspect it sort of depends on what level you are at and your age and maybe, you know, the appropriateness or inappropriateness, I don't know. But I know that even my teacher, Catherine Hiroshi, she was one of the people that was sent to the internment camp. Her high school class boycotted that because she attended Auburn High School, and she showed me her annual where her friend signed it. But it's, yeah, they had the farms too, like you were saying, where people could actually hold on to their farms for them. But Ms. Hiroshi said a lot of the people who took the farms for next to nothing, they would sell them back when the Japanese came back, when they were finally released, and they would charge them exorbitant amounts to get their farms back. So maybe it's sort of undercurrent, as you've alluded to at the beginning of this conversation, versus the South, where they're pretty much like, yeah, I hate you, and you know I hate you, so let's just move on and go about our business. So I found that Auburn may have changed more, but when I was a kid, there was a lot of signs of it. So,
well, yeah, in Sumner, when we lived in Bonanique, before the snowstorm that forced us to move into Auburn, there was an incident at your school, and they called me, and I left work, came out to pick you up, and y'all, you were crying, but you wouldn't talk. And it took a lot of persuasion to find out what had happened. And some kid there in Bonnie Lake in the elementary school had used the N-word. And
I don't think he's going to use it again. I got a hold of his caller, and I remember telling him, don't you ever, as long as you live, ever call anybody that. You know, kind of the way you used to talk to me when I did something you didn't approve of. And I think that little boy, he was younger than me. He was only in, like, third grade. And I think he thought I was going to kill him. The absolute terror that was on his face was unbelievable.
Well, I had taught you kids to realize that that word was just a word. It was nothing that could hurt you. You were a human being, and stand proud. And that's what I brought up with my kids, my godchildren, nieces, nephews, cousins, what have you. You are a human being. Stand proud. Words, what have they said? Words cannot hurt you, but sticks and bones can. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm proud of all of my siblings and some of the ones that I have had some means of helping them grow in life. And I meet children that were in you guys' classrooms, schools, and what have you, that gives me the greatest of respect, saying that they appreciate what I have said to them or what I have done for them. And that's what I'm about, helping the human being become better.
Yeah, I think you've done really good, Mom.
I hope so.
Now, I mean, I know that you had a speech for when you became the Pioneer Queen. Were you going to read that, or did you choose not to?
I choose not to, maybe at a lot of time, because it was a speech by Maya Angelou, and she has passed on. But I'm a phenomenal woman, and I arranged it to say what I wanted to say. And I'm sorry, but I didn't pull it up so that I could say it, and I think that would be too long. But sometime later, I would like to maybe do that speech.
Yeah, that would be cool.
In honor
that
of
would be
her.
Great. Yeah.
As a legacy to her.
Absolutely. Okay, so now, Mom, you are a woman of many talents. Some of the things we haven't really covered about my mom, she cooks, she sews, she knitted, golfing, bowling, public speaking, organizing. Can you tell us some of those things, about some of those things? How'd you get started at golfing? You weren't golfing back south, were you?
No. I started golfing because the doctor said I was having back trouble. And the doctor said that if I took up golf, I would learn to swing, and that would help me exercise in my back. So I took up golfing, and my first golf game, I was 164. It was like a bowling score. And I've won several championships and tournaments. I still love golf, and I haven't been out golfing lately, but I do play with the senior golf tournament, senior golf, out of Auburn.
Wow.
And bowling was quite a treat. And I remember going bowling when you were about two, and everybody would hold you while I bowl. So you were the bowling baby, you know. And if I didn't bring you, they were upset because they would get quite a kick out of babysitting you while I roll the ball. And public speaking comes from I joined Toastmaster. And what I am still learning, and my goal is to become a competent speaker without using crutches and Xeroxes and so forth and so on.
You're doing okay now. This is public. They're listening to you speak.
I enjoy speaking, and several of the Toastmasters members says that I'm speaking, but I'm the worst critic for myself. I know when I have accomplished what I'm supposed to, and I'm not there yet.
Okay. Well, now, what about cooking? What are some of your specialty dishes?
Oh, I don't cook anymore. I used to cook. gumbo was my favorite, southern Creole gumbo that I cooked. And
yeah, Aunt Lynn keeps talking about it.
I've given it up now because I don't entertain like I used to. So.
Aunt Lynn keeps talking about getting you to cook a mess of gumbo up for us all to go get that. And I don't know when that's going to happen. Like she just said, gumbo. You used to make, Carl's favorite dish was your lemon meringue pie.
Yes. Lemon meringue pie, chocolate pie, and pecan pie.
Oh, man.
So those are fabulous.
And then we loved your baked spaghetti in the old roaster that I think Cheryl has the old roaster now.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
cooking is a tradition handed down through the generations. My grandmother, great-grandmother, great-aunts, my uncle was a chef in New York, one of the largest hotels in New York.
Oh, Uncle
Floyd.
About
10 or 20 years. And stems from his mom being a cook. So our generations, they cooked, they sewed, and so we learned it. You learned it, you know. I had a stew built for me so that I could wash dishes and I could stir food in the pan when I was out with my grandmother on her farm. So that's it.
Wow. Okay. Let's see. What are some of the wisdoms that you picked up in your life that you might like to share with people? And then I'll ask you about, you know, raising, you know, how. Let's just go with that for now. What are some of the wisdoms you've picked up that you might like to share with people?
Learn how to do something really good and pass it on.
Good. That's a good one.
If you cannot help someone, don't harm them.
Yeah. Is that it?
The only thing that I'm trying to get it together is saying that where the golden rule is concerned, you want to make sure that your golden rule will help, not harm.
Well, you believe in it from the do unto others as you would do on as you would have them do unto you, not the one that I often think is slightly incorrect. You know, I treat people the way they treat me. They're not the same thing.
I learned something from an author that said, you never have a chance to do when your first impression, period, because you don't have a second chance to do another one.
Yeah.
Whatever your first impression, you want it to be great.
Yes.
Not for yourself, but for the other person. How do that person see you?
Now, Mom, about your children, any comments about, you know, what it was like slightly different raising Carl versus Mark, Cheryl, David, myself?
I had Carl 10 years before the next one. And so we had more time together by himself with me. With the other kids, and especially with you and Cheryl, You were only a year and 11 days apart. So you didn't. I didn't have time to spend with you like I did with Carl. And then there was time different between Carl and David that I had. And then there was Mark being the baby boy was a preemie. And so he was babied more than the others.
I heard about him being a preemie. As a matter of fact, my cousin Anita, this is Dad's niece, Dad's sister's kid. There was one time that they had Mark wrapped up in doll clothes. They said they had to put doll clothes on him because he was so tiny. And
yes.
Someone had him swaddled up on the bed. And Anita said, I didn't even know Mark was on the bed. And, you know, everyone's like, where's Mark? What happened to Mark? And Anita said, I started feeling something kind of squirming underneath me. And there was Mark. She said, I didn't see him in all this stuff because he was so tiny. And we used to joke about that's what happened to Mark. So, you remember that incident?
Yep.
She's so stoic about it. Yep. Okay. Yeah. So, I know that you noticed you have pictures of David butt naked on the little rug, the little happy, beautiful baby in his gorgeous skin, and not one picture of the Brenda. I mean, how does that happen?
Your handprint.
Who cares? I want to see my baby picture. I think that there must be some kind of litigation I can get out for that one. I don't understand it.
I did have them. I don't know where they got lost at.
I've never seen one of Cheryl or myself.
I think they were taken, but I don't know where they are. They got lost
Child
in all
Protective
the shipments.
Child Services. Okay, Mom. So you don't have any thing more to say about the kids or whatever? Hey, look, folks. This is your opportunity to ask my mom about me.
I am very proud. If I had to do it over again in raising my kids, my children, I would do some things different, but not all things. I would like to be a more lovable mother.
Oh.
And that I would be more understanding. But like I tell all of you, there's no role model for a mother to go by. But I am so proud of all of you. And the one thing I will leave when I get off this show is my oldest son, Carl, he said, never say goodbye without saying, I love you. Because you never know what will happen tomorrow.
Aww.
And he would always tell me, Mom, I love you. And then I didn't realize I was going to lose him before he was 40 years old. But I do remember that he would tell me he loved me. And I would repeat it back to him. So all of you listening, and say it with meaning. Don't just say it to say it. Really mean that you love that person. Period. A big period.
There you go, Mom. That's excellent. Well, I just have a few more questions. I know that we stretched out a little bit longer than normal, but I just think this is momentous, and this historical stuff is really incredible to me. of the what changes? Can you talk just real quickly about some of the changes? I'm not rushing you or anything. About some of the changes you've seen in your time, either racially or as a woman, that you never thought you'd see. And let me tag this on the end of that. What changes do you hope to see?
I hope to see that women can be equal, both in education and in careers, employment. They are starting to. There are women being put in high career positions. But not as I don't want to see them as a token. I want to see them that this position is given to them because they truly earned it. That their
right.
income will be matched with the men. We women are still paid lower than men, although we have the same capabilities. And I would like to see children be children and then grow up.
Amen. Amen.
We're rushing our kids through life so fast. They are not having a chance to be a child. And I really enjoyed when I could have stayed home with my children and enjoyed them while they were growing up. With you and Cheryl, I did do partial work, domestic work, so that I could be home with you more than I did with David and Mark. So, what's your next question?
Is there anything you'd still like to do or accomplish in life?
Yes, lose weight. My
okay.
goal is to get back to within a few, to lose weight, not for fashion purposes, but for health purposes. And the other thing is, I want to travel. My goal is to go to Italy and to Africa, hopefully before my demise.
Yeah, which hopefully won't be for a long, long time. Yes?
I'm proud of my daughter, oldest daughter. She did 24 and a half years or better in the National Guard. My oldest son did 24 years in the Army. And David went on to get his degree in college. And my baby is getting her PhD in psychology. And my niece is going to become a lawyer. So
yeah.
I feel that some input has been spread and they will. And I don't know, but if there would, could, should be peace on earth,
that's excellent, Mom. That's excellent. Well, Nina, Lennis, any last words that are left in the chat room? Okay. Okay. Well, wait, hold on. Somebody else is typing. No, maybe not. Okay. So I guess that's that. Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing what you did share with us, Mom. It really is illuminating to hear all the different aspects of the South and the differences on how people acted, the neighborhoods, the treatment politically. I think there's a lot of people up north who just have no idea, especially if they've never really been there. And even if you visit, you're not going to get that same inside information. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed yourself. And I hope everybody else enjoyed the show.
I hope it was enlightening on some and that it can better humanity.
Yeah. Some of the people in the chat room are expressing how sad it was, the different racial issues that were going on, both here and in the South that you spoke about. So, and they're saying thank you for being on the show today.
All righty.
All right. Thank you, Mom. And thank you all of the people that are out there listening on archive that join in and listen later by link or podcast. I really do appreciate your support. Even if you just pop, you don't call in, it's okay. Either way that you do it. I know Lydia listened. She didn't get a chance to speak, but her phone might have been kicking her off. I'm not really sure. It's been a weird day for technology today. I do want to go over some of the shows that are coming up, folks, and so that
I
you can.
Thank you. Brenda,
go
I
ahead,
want to
Mom.
Thank you. I want to thank you for my lovely happy birthday article. This has been a wonderful 84th birthday.
Oh. It sounds like you had a really good day. I mean, you had a good Sunday and then a good day yesterday, and I think it's 84 is a milestone. And every year is a milestone after that. Well, every year is a milestone for most of us, right? Not like
yes.
I just said happy birthday.
I love you.
I love you too, Mom. If you want to pop off, you can, or you can listen to the lineup that's coming up. You gonna hold on and listen to the lineup?
I think so, if my phone is gonna hold on for a little bit longer.
Okay, it's just gonna be quick, Mom. Okay, the lineup coming up for episodes, folks, on the Essence of Success Radio Network that's started by a woman and run by women. But it's for everybody. The next show is tomorrow in the studio with Lennis, and she covers hot topics. Her show's on at 7 p.m. Pacific time. It looks like she's going to be doing.
She's going to be reading poetry from her book.
Oh,
she's
okay.
going to be reading poetry from her book this time. So, yeah, that should be very interesting, and I'm looking forward to that show.
Okay. And then on, excuse me?
I was just, it's good.
Oh, okay. And then on let's see,
Thursday
at 6 p.m., we have Filmcology. That's film and psychology put together with Brenda B. And the movies we'll be covering are Bringing Up Baby from 1938, it's Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn, and What's Up, Doc? The 1972 basically it's the same movie, but different director and how he interpreted it. And then on Friday, we have Friday Traffic Jams with Lennis. That's at 5 p.m. And I'm not sure what her music variety is going to be on. Oh, surprise music. It's going to be
a
surprise.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a surprise for Lennis, too, I think. She's just going to pop in.
Okay, then.
Sounds like.
So says the manager. But it's an hour-long show, folks, and it gets you in the mood for the weekend, and she helps you on your traffic woes all the way home, at least for an hour of it. So then we move to Saturday, and at 2 p.m., the show with Time to Love with Lydia is Spiritual Homeostasis. And homeostasis is when usually if you're talking about your body, it's when your body is trying to keep things balanced. So if you just transpose that into spiritual, it's when you are trying to keep your spiritual life out. And then we go to Sunday. 3 p.m., Lennis does psychic readings. And she had a boon last week. There were 33 callers. And some up to 10 people or more were turned away. So try to get in your calls early, folks. You might want to call in a little bit before 3 so you can get into the lineup. She goes in line, first come, first serve. And call with one question, and she might let you do 2. But that's up to us.
Nope. That's only if we don't have a whole list of people. Only one if there's a whole list. 2 if there isn't.
So says the manager, not me. So I'm not. I have no say in it. Okay. Then the next show is Monday. LNB, Passage to Empowerment, Bringing Mental Health into the Light. Now we're getting into the bare bones of what I've been dealing with for the last 8-9 years. And it's trying to help people balance out their their mental health issues. So we're going to be doing this all week, folks. Next week, the main theme is mental health issues and from different perspectives as best as we could do it for those perspective shows. So hope you can join us on Monday at 7 p.m. for that because we want to stop all these killings that are going on for people who really just need some help. Then on Tuesday, we're back to Tuesday. Our show at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, BYO Brilliance, is the brilliance of seeking help. And I will be talking about the stigma that's associated with the mental health and ways to get around that and ways to help and support other people who might need support in getting that help. Okay? Again, we want to thank Donnie Berry for interviewing on the show with us. We took a little bit more time, but she's always worth it. And thank you, everyone, for listening, who was in the chat room, and all the people that called in, and the people that are listening in the archives. Live with brilliance, folks. You got it in you. You were born with it. Bye, Mom. I love you, and happy birthday.
Good night, everyone.
Happy
birthday. Okay. Bye.